A classic book on the Christian roots of America was first released in 1987 by law professor John Eidsmo. It's called Christianity and the Constitution. The book contains some great content showing that the Bible played a key role in the creation of our governing document. In the book, there are several mini biographies. One of those is of the Reverend John Witherspoon, the president of Princeton. Witherspoon was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. However, Witherspoon was not there when the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution. But, as John Eisenhower points out, Witherspoon trained many of the delegates of the Constitutional Convention in biblical principles, chief among them being James Madison, a key architect of the Constitution. And John Eisenhower joins us now on Vocal Points. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And, John, it's great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
It's always good to be with you, Jerry. Hope you're doing well.
Sure. You know, it's unfortunate that the average American today knows very little, really, about our rich American history, our rich Judeo-Christian roots. I bet you the average American, if you ask them about Witherspoon, they'd say, oh, you mean Reese Witherspoon, the actress? But they wouldn't know anything about John Witherspoon.
Interesting to see if there's any relationship between the two.
I think there might be.
None, but
oh, really? I think somewhere I had heard that there was.
Most influential Americans in history.
Yeah, go ahead and tell us about John Witherspoon. Wax eloquent.
If we were to call James Madison the father of the Constitution, as many do, we'd have to call John Witherspoon the grandfather of the Constitution. Because Witherspoon taught many of those who wrote the Constitution, and that includes nine of the delegates to the convention, including Madison. Witherspoon was a Presbyterian pastor who had come over to the United States from Scotland, and there in Scotland, he had been the leader of the evangelical party of the Presbyterian Church when they were dealing with others who were more in the moderate, or who we might describe today as modernist or liberal wing, moving in that direction. But Witherspoon was one of those who wanted to hold to Christian orthodoxy, and one sermon that he preached, in fact, that created some animosity in England was titled The Absolute Necessity of Salvation Through Jesus Christ. And there were some who criticized him that he was being overly harsh by saying that anybody who doesn't know Jesus Christ cannot be saved. He responded by preaching a second message, an inquiry into Christian charity, and in that message, he said that you say that I'm not really being loving. Well, what do we mean by loving? A person who really loves another person is going to be concerned about their eternal condition, and if somebody is headed for perdition, a loving person is going to be telling that person where he is going astray and how to get right. Telling people of the absolute necessity of salvation in Jesus Christ, he said, that is the ultimate way of being charitable or loving. Anyway, that was where he stood in Scotland. His name came to the attention of the people of the College of New Jersey in America. The College of New Jersey has changed its name. It's today called Princeton, but anyway, they called him to come over and be the president of Princeton, and he served in that capacity for many years, some 26 years. During that time, we had 478 young men graduate under him, and when they studied there at Princeton, not only did they just be there while he was the president, but they would be under his direct supervision. After all, we're dealing with maybe less than 18 students per year, so he would get to know them all personally, and he'd have them up early in the morning to drill them on Bible and rhetoric and theology and political theory and many subjects like this. And so they would get to know him very well, and he'd get to know them well. And out of those 478 graduates who had graduated while he was president, we find that 114 of them became pastors. 13 became governors of various states. 3 were United States Supreme Court justices. 20 were United States senators. 33 were U.S. congressmen. 1 was vice president, and that was Aaron Burr, who That's a mixed blessing, but Burr's father had also been a previous president of Princeton, and nine of them were delegates to the Constitutional Convention. That's about one-sixth. 55 delegates, nine is almost one-sixth of them were his students. So you could almost even say that the Constitutional Convention was a Princeton alumni reunion.
That's a very interesting thing. And he taught them a biblical perspective on government. John, a lot of times Christian education today, unfortunately, is in effect worldly education with a little, you know, Christian veneer on the top to make it sound Christian. But in reality, they're not teaching principles of the Bible. In contrast, Witherspoon did teach the principles of the Bible and how they apply to government and all of life.
Absolutely, he did. And some of his basic principles were the fact of the sinful nature of man. And because man is a sinner, Witherspoon would emphasize, number one, using his Presbyterian term, the total depravity of human nature. But he would emphasize that, number one, we need government. We have to have a system of government, because otherwise people's sin nature would just run rampant and people would abuse each other all the time. But at the same time, he recognized that this is total and it's universal, and that means those who run the government have the same sinful nature as everybody else. That being the case, we need to carefully check the power of those who rule. And that being the case, although he was not a delegate to the Constitutional Convention, he approved the Constitution. In fact, he served as a delegate to the New Jersey ratifying convention, where they approved the Constitution, and he was one of those who argued and voted for ratification. But the idea that we have sinful people governing sinful people means that we have to have government power, but it also means that power needs to be carefully limited. And I feel very confident that the design of the founding fathers at the convention, that is, of having a government of limited and delegated powers and having those powers separated among various branches and levels and checks and balances and the like, I have no doubt that Witherspoon strongly approved of that system.
Tell us about James Madison and the fact that he even went to Princeton as opposed to, let's say, William and Mary in his native Virginia. That itself is surprising. And then I understand that after his studies in, you know, basically in the Bible and government and all these different things at Princeton, he also even stayed on a year after for further Bible studies.
That is correct. And the understanding is that during that last year, the year he stayed afterward, he studied Hebrew. And that he was able to read the Hebrew laws and institutions in the original language and understand them. And that would enable him to apply them to our system of government. To call Madison the father of the Constitution, I think, is probably going a little too far. There were several, like Gouverneur Morris and several others, who were very influential there as well. But Madison certainly was one of the most influential delegates.
Okay, excellent. All right, what else do you want to say about Witherspoon? It's my understanding that it was Benjamin Rush who traveled over to Scotland in order to even potentially recruit Witherspoon, and he was successful in that mission.
That could be correct. Benjamin Rush was also a devout Christian, a medical doctor, and one of those who was an architect of the Constitution, and I wasn't actually aware that it was Benjamin Rush who traveled to Scotland to bring him to America, but that may very well be correct, and he would certainly be in character for him. But I think some of the basic principles that Witherspoon would bring to the United States would be, first of all, a strong faith in God and in his daily providence on behalf of men. And there are those who try to say the founding fathers are not Christian, and one of the reasons they say that is they use neutral terms like providence. Well, we need to understand what providence means. Providence means God's daily provision for men. The very term providence is a direct repudiation of the whole concept of deism, that God is removed and not actively involved with human affairs. Second point would be, as we said, the recognition of the fact of human sin. A third would be, as we saw before, the absolute necessity of salvation through Christ. But a fourth would be the need for and the right to personal and political and religious liberty. And as a believer in religious liberty, many think that strict Calvinists couldn't believe in religious liberty at all, but actually, that was one of the main emphases of Calvinism and Puritanism as a form of Calvinism, and that's that each person is directly responsible to God for the condition of his soul, and no priest, no pope, and no government official can intervene between them. And so, in that sense, they did advocate liberty of conscience, and Witherspoon was a strong advocate of this. In fact, Witherspoon at one time declared that the greatest service government could render to Christianity was to defend and secure rights of conscience in the most equal and impartial manner. And further, there is not a single instance in history in which civil government was not, or civil liberty was not lost and religious liberty preserved entire. In other words, when civil liberty is lost, religious liberty is lost as well. And a positive attitude toward independence. In fact, when you think about American independence and how sometimes the American War for Independence was called in England the Presbyterian Rebellion, Scottish Presbyterians, we need to understand the conflict that had been occurring between Scotland and England, particularly in 1740 with Bonnie Prince Charles and his attempt to reestablish Scotland as an independent nation, and it was brutally suppressed, and thousands upon thousands of Scots had to flee the country, and the majority of those who fled to America. One generation later, we have the American War for Independence led by many Scots, and so you could almost call that Scotland's revenge. And when Horace Walpole in England said, "Cousin America has run off with a Presbyterian parson," no doubt he was referring to Reverend Witherspoon. But a couple other points would be, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I just want to say this. In reading George Bancroft, a 19th century historian, I read his entire six-part series of the, you know, the history of the United States. It took me a long time, by the way. but I remember the phrase, Presbyterian Junto. That's what they called it in England. That's what they called the rebellion of the colonists in America.
Absolutely. And they were thinking of these Presbyterians in America one generation after the Presbyterian Rebellion in Scotland. But anyway, just a couple more points that would be key to understanding Witherspoon would be the idea of good works and morality. But these, he would say, were logical results of salvation by grace. Witherspoon would say one is saved solely by the grace of God through the atoning work of Christ on the cross. But the evidence of salvation, the evidence that we have God's grace, is that we show it forth by good works. Luther, I think, put it very well one time when he said that we are saved by faith alone, but not by a faith that is alone, emphasizing that true saving faith is accompanied by works. Now, here's another point a lot of people won't recognize about Witherspoon.
All right, just so you know, we have about 40 seconds left. Go ahead.
That's that he had a strong hope that America would prosper and be blessed. And he remarked one time, "Don't be surprised if you see a turnpike all the way to the Pacific Ocean in your lifetime." Now, a turnpike was kind of like a wagon track, but at least he saw a vision of America going from sea to shining sea.
That is amazing. Okay, morallaw.org. I'm so glad your book, Christianity and the Constitution, is still in print. And there is, as I said, an entire chapter dedicated to Reverend John Witherspoon. He was the only minister, as I understand it, who signed the Declaration of Independence. John Eidsmo, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.